Hello, listeners. Jordan here. I just want to let you know that you can listen to Nighttime early and ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
You are tuned to the Nighttime Podcast, focused on the fringe of Canada.
Welcome back to an ongoing series exploring the life and crime of Lindsay Suvonarov, the young woman convicted of conspiracy to commit murder as a result of her role in the foiled Halifax Shopping Center Valentine's Day shooting plot. In the last entry in the series, The Story of Lindsay Suvonarov, Part 4, Life After Planning Death, we completed our three-piece interview with enigmatic Suvonarov, who had broken her silence to share her story with us from behind the walls of a Canadian federal prison. During our time with Lindsay, we heard a hell of a lot. Her childhood, her views on Nazism and Columbine, her relationship with James Gamble and their mass shooting plot, her arrest, her legal battle, her time in prison. It's been a real wild ride. And just like any respectable wild ride, as we traveled across Lindsay's story, we didn't take much time to slow down and examine the scenery. But that's about to change. Now that the story is told, we have the perspective and the time to more carefully consider the many topics and questions that had surfaced during the story. I consider this as a sort of pivoting point in my coverage of Lindsay's dark but fascinating story. The direction we'll now take will lead us through a series of episodes dedicated to specific concepts I felt worthy of further examination. And to help me with the unpacking, I've invited a series of guests with much more experience on these topics than me. Some of these upcoming episodes will cover the Columbiner subculture, internet radicalization, Lindsay's history told by people other than her, and a whole lot more. But we'll get to that stuff in upcoming weeks. I decided to start this coverage by looking a bit closer at the mechanics of James and Lindsay's mass shooting plot. And I put mechanics in air quotes. It became clear during this series that Lindsay and James spent much more time considering their wardrobes, music, and artwork than they did on a strategy for their murderous plot. And that fact has made many people question what would have, or even what could have happened had Lindsay been able to pass through airport security and connect with her co-conspirators. But thankfully, these are points left to speculation. But regardless, the fact does remain that something horrible was close to happening, and the potential for it was there, as James did have access to firearms, specifically a shotgun, a rifle, and enough ammunition to have forever changed Halifax. And that's where we're going to direct our attention. Tonight, in this episode of Nighttime, we're going to be joined by the Canadian firearms expert Trevor Furlott, and together, we're going to unload James and Lindsay's arsenal. In a few moments, we'll get to our conversation with Trevor, but I want to give a bit of a background before we dive into this. Namely, I'll tell you what we know about the firearms involved in the plot and how we know about them. During part 3 of the series titled Lindsay, James, and the Valentine's Day Massacre, Lindsay had explained that the pair chose to carry out the attack in Halifax, as James had access to guns owned by his father, and of course it would be easier to get Lindsay to Halifax than it would be to get James and the guns into the United States. However, during our episode, Lindsay didn't give much detail on the weapons, the amount of ammunition, or how exactly the pair planned to use them. But that said, we have access to nearly every word Lindsay and James said to each other. They didn't once communicate by phone or by video chat. In fact, aside from the initial communications on Tumblr, the entirety of their relationship played out on Facebook Messenger. And the 1,200-plus page log of their chat history, it gives us a detailed view of nearly every aspect of this plot. So to obtain some facts about the firearms James had access to, Trevor and I had to look no further than an archive of this Facebook conversation and the selfies James sent to Lindsay holding the weapons. So, to provide a bit of context, before we get to the conversation about the firearms, I'll share the first mention of the weapons just as it occurred in the conversation between James and Lindsay. The reading you're about to hear is a portion of the conversation occurring only 2 days after the pair began chatting. At this point in the chat, the pair were communicating about nothing of consequence. It was basically, what do you do for fun, getting to know you type conversation. However, when discussing fashion of all things, James first tells his new friend Lindsay about his ambitions to commit a mass shooting and describes the weapons he would use.
I think it would have been too big for me anyway.
How much would one of those black Civil War jackets cost?
I have no idea. Prices on these things tend to be sort of random. You might get lucky and find one at a low price, but I'd expect to spend a few hundred.
I'll see if they have any at the Army surplus place next time I go.
Then we can coordinate outfits and look badass.
That'd be sick.
And just sort of terrify everyone.
One of my favorite hobbies.
Where do you usually scare people?
Just in public. In general.
Because I was just thinking, if you had a usual hangout or something, I'd show up there too, and then people would be like, oh god, there's two of them now.
That would be perfect.
And we'd just sort of exchange conspiratorial glances before staring at them.
Hopefully sending them running.
What a great way to spend a day, just terrorizing normal, inferior people.
I hope to do that on a major scale someday.
Same.
I have everything I need as well.
Do tell.
Rifle, shotgun, outfit, ammo, knife.
I'm jealous.
I only have 13 bullets for the rifle, though, so I'll have to make them count. It's also a single shotgun. Can only fit one shell at a time. But it's better than nothing. I just wish I had a partner that could take the shotgun while I take the hunting rifle. Way less chance of getting attacked, jumped, if I had a partner.
I've never fired a gun before. I've lived such a pitiful, sheltered existence. Though it's something I like to think about.
I haven't either, which is why I'd have to be extra precise.
The next excerpt I'll share occurs a few days later, eerily on Christmas Day, no less. At this point in the conversation, again only days after meeting, Lindsay and James had just come to the agreement that they'd carry out some sort of mass murder event together. In the excerpt you'll hear read, Lindsay and James are putting together the first pieces in their plan. Here's how they decided who would use which weapon.
Ugh, I wish it could happen.
Anything can happen when we put our minds to it.
Very good point.
Besides, you're working with me. I've already done a lot in my life. This should be easy.
Now we just need money.
I'm pretty sure I'll already be getting some for graduating, but either way, I'll need to get a job within a month or so. Maybe get some of my stories published.
That could work.
I'll try to look like a nice, productive member of society before I end up wreaking havoc.
I've tried and failed that already.
You feel like you don't belong with society, right? If that makes sense.
Yes. I want no fucking part of it. Get a job, go to school. I just want to leave this place and take people with me.
Me, I always had a feeling I'd die young. Like it's what I was meant to do.
I feel the same way. Like I was never born with the mindset, ability to interact with people properly, function properly on my own, or get into a relationship, have kids, get married, and get a job. I don't want any of that shit. I want to sleep forever.
It was just about 2 years ago that I attempted suicide, but I lived. A year later, nearly succumbed to alcohol poisoning, twice. Now I'm realizing that I didn't die then because there's a different way I was meant to die, and with us together, it can happen.
I feel the same way. Like, I've known where all my dad's weapons were for about 6 months, and I've barely been holding off using them. Maybe this could be what I was meant to hold off for. I don't know.
I mean, I'm not really one to believe in spiritual hocus pocus, but, you know, just from talking to you these past few days, I feel like fate's involved here. Or like we must have known each other in a past life or something.
Yeah, it's possible. I just want to find out what happens after death so bad. And if there is nothingness, I'll be too dead to care.
And I came out of my years-long depression at just the same time I started posting all that Columbine stuff. I think it's a sign.
Where would you want to hit if you did come here? And what weapon would you want? The lever-action hunting rifle with 13 bullets or the single-action shotgun with 25 birdshot shells?
I really have no idea. This is all rather unfamiliar to me.
You can have the shotgun then. More ammo.
Sounds good. Again, I'm still somewhat drunk.
That's fine.
If you're looking for a smoking gun, I can absolutely guarantee you, you will not find it.
In October 2001, a series of letters filled with a deadly powder called anthrax were dropped into the U.S. mail system. What started as an unprecedented case turned into an unsettling mystery. Who sent these deadly letters, and why? From Campside Media and Sony Music Entertainment, I'm Josh Dean, and this is Cover Up Season 4, The Anthrax Threat, available now.
These short pieces are enough to give us a view of the firearms available to the plotters in a basic sense. However, James Gamble also took many photographs of himself posing with the guns. Many of these photos ended up in the chat logs via picture messages, and many others were posted to his Tumblr page. When I shared the photos with our soon-to-be guest, Trevor Furlott, he instantly recognized the shotgun and the rifle as very common models of firearms. In fact, Trevor has each of these in his personal collection. So needless to say, Trevor knows a lot about these firearms. So I guess there's no need to spend any more time setting this up. Let's get to the conversation with my friend Trevor Furlott, a highly respected firearms enthusiast, advocate, and expert.
My name is Trevor Furlott, and I am the vice president of the Restigouche County Sport and Gun Club, one of the largest gun clubs in Atlantic Canada. I am a certified range safety officer. I'm a firearms instructor, a co-host on a firearms-related podcast, and a avid competition shooter and recreational or occasional hunter.
Awesome. Now, Trevor, when I was looking into this story, one kind of aspect that comes up a lot is the idea of would the pair, Lindsay and James, even have been able to, you know, pull off what they were threatening to do given the firearms they have? And I know nothing about firearms. So I sent you the photos of James holding the two guns in question. Were you able to identify what they are?
Absolutely. Not only was I able to identify them, I own both of those firearms in question. One is very common firearm in Canada. It is a single shot Cooey 12 gauge shotgun. So single shot means that the barrel on the firearm is essentially a pipe. It holds one round of ammunition at a time. It's a break action. You push a lever on the back of the receiver, the gun breaks in two, put a round of ammunition in it, close it up, cock the hammer, press the trigger, then you have to manually open it again, put in another round of ammunition, close it up, and fire again. It's fallen out of fashion in recent years because of the advent of fancier pump action shotguns and semi-automatic shotguns that goose hunters and upland hunters would use. But for decades, that was probably the most popular shotgun in Canada. A lot of Canadian homes had a Cooey shotgun, and very common hunting shotgun for shooting grouse and rabbits.
So that was that was the shotgun. What about the other, like, more rifle style? What's that?
Yeah, the other one appears to be a Savage Model 99. They came in a couple of different calibers. Looking at it, I think it's 300 Savage, which is not a very common caliber these days. The one that I have, for example, was made in 1954, and that one looks to be about the same vintage. And the action on that firearm is a lever action. So it's not self-loading necessarily. You put the cartridges into the top of the receiver, and then there's a lever. Think of like a cowboy gun from back in the old West or the spaghetti Western movies, how when the cowboy would shoot, then he would have to manually manipulate this lever. And what that lever does is it pulls a fired cartridge out of the chamber. And when you close the lever, it loads another cartridge. So every time you fire the gun, you press the trigger, then you've got to manually cycle this lever to take out the empty bullet and chamber another round of live ammunition to the chamber. Not terribly slow to fire, but incredibly slow to reload. So this firearm had a lot of things going against it for their intended purpose. The media was throwing around mass shooting, and I don't want to play semantics with, you know, how many people have to die for it to be considered a mass shooting. But listening to all the episodes, and I listened to them all again today on my way home, they had 13 rounds of ammunition. At one time, they talked about saving two for themselves, so now they're down to 11 rounds of ammunition. He was going to try and kill his parents, so if that had worked, he would have been down to 9 rounds of ammunition. And then James was supposed to kill Randall. So they would have arrived at the mall with eight rounds of ammunition. So they would have had enough to fill the firearm once and shoot 5 rounds and then put 4 more in. Had he got through the first 5 rounds, when he stopped to reload, the mall would have emptied. It would have been so slow to reload that everybody just would have ran for the exits. The shotgun is arguably faster, but it's to reload because you just crack it open and put another bullet in, but it's one bullet at a time, so very slow.
Going to the shotgun for a second, I've never touched one, but to crack it open and take a bullet out and whatnot, how much strength would you have to do that? I'm thinking she's really tiny. I'm guessing she's 90 pounds. Would it be easy for her to crack open a gun and take a bullet out? As somebody who, again, she said it herself in the Facebook log, she's never fired a weapon, so she'd be a complete amateur.
Yeah, she had a couple of things working against her. So you and I mean, this will be an audio show, but you can actually see me right now because we're doing this via Skype with a camera. So this tab on the back of the receiver here, that's what you have to depress. And as you can see, there. It does take some effort to actually get it open. So she would have to struggle with that, and then she manually, puts in the shell. Well, now what? If she's not shown how to use this, pull the trigger all you want. Nothing happens. Just because you put a bullet into this gun does not mean it's going to fire. If she doesn't have a lot of firearms experience, she wasn't brought up hunting with this on this particular model of firearm with her father, she would almost certainly, under the stress of what's happening, forget to do this, and that is cock the hammer. So once the hammer is cocked, then when you depress the trigger, the gun would fire. Now you have to open it up again. Oh, this one ejected the spent casing for me, and then I would drop another one in. So you'd be fumbling in your pocket for loose rounds of ammunition, a jacket or a hoodie or something in your, she said she was going to wear skinny jeans, not conducive to holding ammunition and getting it in and out of your pockets. So they really, their lack of experience in firearms really would have contributed to not understanding the logistics and the poor logistics that went into this. So a lot of people said, I don't know if they could pull it off. And, other school shooters and other mass shooters have had firearms experience, have gone to ranges, have taken lessons. They didn't have time to do that. She's never shot a gun. This is 12-gauge, 90-pound girl. It's going to knock her around. The other thing is, when they start lighting rounds of ammunition off inside a building, their auditory, they're actually going to be in physical pain from the ringing in their ears from shooting a gun inside a building. 12-gauge is loud. The rifle is incredibly loud. So that would have also caused extra stress and distraction to, oh my God, this thing is knocking me around and my ears are absolutely ringing.
So I get the shotgun, that part I really understand, because I can envision you opening it and putting the new bullet in and all that stuff. With the rifle, which seems to be the more, I guess, the more better suited of the two guns for what they were planning. When he has it loaded and he has, say, 5 shots in there, can those shots be one after the other? Or is there anything you have to do before you take a shot and go on to the next one?
Well, why don't I load it up and actually show you how it works, and then we can discuss it. How would that be?
Sounds great.
Okay, now obviously, for the listeners, I am not loading a firearm in my home. I have dummy cartridges for the purposes of this exercise with Jordan here. It's illegal to load a firearm where it's not legal to discharge the firearm. So, all right, so the first thing we have to do, Jordan, is we've got to get the action open so we can insert the cartridges into the firearm. And one of the problems that they may run into, but I'm assuming that James probably had experience with this firearm. There's a little tab down here. That's a safety. And if you don't know about that, you can't even open the action. So you got to depress the safety. Now the action's open. Now you put the bullets in one at a time. You see how fast this is going? And I'm experienced in firearms and with this particular gun. But it's just the way it is. You just cannot load this thing fast enough. And I'm loading this off a table. I'd have to be pulling the cartridges out of my coat pocket or something. So, all right. So now I've got five in there. Close this up. So now there would be a bullet in the chamber. So what happens, Jordan, is you would press the trigger. And now you've got to do this. Watch my hand. And then close it again. Press the trigger. Open that up. This would be hilarious if anyone was watching. And the gun's jammed. I can't even get that dummy round out of the chamber.
So right now there's a guy who's much bigger than you on top of you, elbowing you in the face.
More often than not, and I learned this from my threat assessment training, and we learned in this case too, they were suicidal and they did plan to shoot themselves when they were done. And there's been many instances in the United States where someone goes in to shoot up a place. The second they're confronted with any kind of resistance, they shoot themselves. There's one story where that person's AR-15 jammed and a civilian who was licensed to carry a handgun pointed his handgun at him. As soon as he got the AR-15 unjammed, he shot himself with it. So, you can see it's kind of cumbersome. Now, in fairness, these are already fired cartridges and they swell up a little bit, so they don't go in and out of the chamber very well. So it's not really a fair test.
But it still gives a great idea. Like even just hearing how long it took you to load it, that's you, an expert, sitting down at a table doing this. If you're standing, people screaming, you have a mask on, because he would have been wearing a scream mask. It's going to take a lot longer. And like you said, you know, the mall's clearing out at this point. Somebody may grab you. And even in his logs, the chat logs, he was terrified of the idea of people giving resistance and possibly getting their hands on him. So, I don't know. It definitely, seeing you hold the guns and load them, it gives me a different kind of perspective. In your mind, with the weapons that they had, if they had have gotten in the mall with those weapons, how do you see it playing out? Do you think it would have been the massacre that the media maybe led it to believe, or Lindsay and James thought it could have been?
Well, with only 8 rounds of rifle ammunition, we don't know how many rounds of 12 gauge and what kind of 12 gauge. If they went in there with birdshot, 12 gauge ammunition is called birdshot for a reason. It's really good on birds, and that's about it. So there would have been injuries, but probably no death from the 12 gauge, unless they were like literally point blank, which no one's going to stand still and let them get shot, you know, let somebody shoot them. So, and assuming they got in there with all 13 rounds of ammunition and assuming they could hit some targets, I think probably the worst we would have seen would have been maybe 5 people shot. I don't know how fatally, I don't know how proficient he would have been. I don't know if he ever fired that firearm.
Yeah, I think he said he had never shot it. I believe his experience with a gun is walking around his bedroom holding a gun, taking pictures of himself.
Yeah, and hopefully not practicing to load it. So, but as I said, any loss of life is too much, obviously, but thank goodness they were not planned. They didn't understand firearms, and I mean, they obviously were going to use what they had access to, and they should not have had access to these firearms. It's been claimed that the firearms belonged to his father. So somehow, obviously, because he took pictures of himself with his father's firearms, he had access to these firearms, unlawful access. The only person who can access your firearms is the licensed firearm owner. So I'm not sure how up to speed maybe that home was with Canadian firearms laws and safe storage laws, but he had access to them. And I think that had he got through the first five rounds, if somebody close puts a chair across the back of his head and the mass shooting is over. But you never want to, you know, I'm not advocating that by any stretch of the imagination. Get yourself as far away as fast as you can and don't try and be a hero. But it's a very real possibility that someone could have definitely tossed a chair into his face and taken him out. So chances are it would have been a clusterfuck and they would have got nothing done. But, I mean, even if they got one person killed, that's one too many, right? I'm 6 feet tall, just about. Look how big this gun is. Like, how am I going to get this gun in the mall?
Not only that, they were going to take the bus to the mall. And they also had plans of bringing a bunch of Molotov cocktails with them.
Oh, Jesus.
On the bus.
Now, the shotgun, though. Let me show you something about the shotgun. The shotgun could have been brought into the mall because it wouldn't be hard to put in some kind of duffel bag. Because the unique thing about a shotgun, this kind of shotgun, is watch this. That part comes off. What's now the longest part is this barrel. And this barrel is between 28 and 30 inches.
Okay.
So less than 3 feet.
For people out there, Trevor, who are interested in guns, maybe they don't realize that there's a popular Canadian podcast for firearms enthusiasts. Where can they hear more of you?
We're over at slamfireradio.com. So we're in all your usual podcast catcher apps and, of course, on our website and Facebook and Instagram.
I want to bookend this discussion by again restating the fact that any loss of life is tragic. If one shot had been fired in the Halifax Shopping Center's food court, it would have been unimaginable. In our conversation, we simply set out to consider what exactly these weapons would have been capable of in the inexperienced hands of Lindsay Suvanaroth and James Gamble. Fortunately, an anonymous tipster made a call to Crime Stoppers and stopped this plot dead in its tracks. Thanks to you, anonymous tipster, these firearms are being unloaded in a speculative discussion as opposed to being done by a SWAT team on the scene of yet another mass shooting. Now, when we return for our next episode, we'll continue to examine the concepts associated with the story of Lindsay Suvanaroth and the Valentine's Day shooting plot. But until then, we'll conclude this episode of Nighttime. I want to end with a few thanks. A big thank you goes out to Trevor Furlott for taking the time to join us and provide his unique insight on the capabilities of these firearms. If any of you listening are interested in firearms-related discussion, subscribe to Trevor's show, Slam Fire Radio. It should be available wherever you get Nighttime. A huge shout-out goes to the Canadian bands Vox Somnia and Paragon Cause for providing the musical and ambient themes for this episode. You can check out both great bands by following the links in this episode's show notes. A big thank you to Tyler of the Westside Fairy Tales podcast and Lisa of the Secret Life of Weddings podcast. Tyler and Lisa played the parts of Lindsay and James in the reenactments of the Facebook chats you heard earlier. Now, I'll be honest, I'm never crazy about reenactments, but I thought including a few short pieces would add some context to my discussion with Trevor, and I think the actors hit a home run on it. Now, on the topic of these reenactments, please let me know what you thought of the ones included in this episode, and let me know what, if any, you'd like me to include in upcoming episodes related to this story. Now, I'll end this with the biggest thanks of all. I want to send a huge thank you to everyone who's listening. Without you, I'd have no excuse to spend so much of my free time on this show. For anyone out there who wants more Nighttime, please check out the Patreon group. For as little as a dollar a month, you can support the creation of the show and access the supporter-exclusive feed, which provides ad-free, early releases of episodes in addition to prior episodes no longer available on this main feed. You can visit by joining patreon.com/nighttimepodcast. With that said, I'd like to thank the current patrons of the show and welcome the newest members to the group. Richard B., Keith Nolan, Alyssa Martin, Ann G., and Kelly from Slamfire Radio. I appreciate your generous support at nighttime. And for anyone else who'd like to support the show but can't help financially, you can give me a big hand by telling your friends about me and leaving a positive review on Apple Podcasts or equivalent. If any of you listening want to stay up to date with my activities on and off the show, follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I use the handle @NighttimePod. If you have any story ideas or feedback on the show, I'd love to hear from you at nighttimepodcast@gmail.com. And until next time, take care of each other, hug your loved ones tight, and let me know if you see anything weird.
The Nighttime Podcast is written, hosted, and produced by Jordan Bonaparte. Copyright Jordan Bonaparte.
Like what I was thinking I could share online if you ever decide you want to do it, whether it's you or them, you could do a demonstration with the exact guns, like do a video or something.
I totally want to do that, but I want to do it with a novice. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, let's say she just got off the airplane.
Yeah.
All right, look, I'm going to show you how to use these guns. What do we got, 20 minutes? I'm going to show you how to use these guns. I can't demonstrate shooting them for you because we're in an apartment.
Yeah, well, and they don't have enough bullets to test it.
Right. Here's the ammo. Here's the guns. I got a timer that I use for competition, and I'm going to be screaming. I'm going to be putting you under intense mental stress while you're doing it. Ready, set, go. Load the gun, load the gun, load the gun. Shoot, 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 shoot. And people are screaming and freaking out to see how.
That'd be really cool. If you get an opportunity and you do it, like that'd be awesome.
I want to do it with you, but that means I've got to get us on the Nova Scotia range.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be really cool.
Okay. Well, if you're up for it, let me try and set it up.
Yeah. Whenever you're in town, we'll do it.
Well, there's an indoor range that I go at before matches on Saturdays, and I'll be back in town at the end of the month for a match.
Well, let's do it.
All right. We'll set something up.
Awesome.
I'll send you the exact date soon.
Yeah. Dinner's on me.
Oh, sweet. All right. Cool, man.
Awesome, buddy. Thanks so much.
Thanks, bud.
Bye-bye.
I said to my parents, don't trust her. They wouldn't listen.
Every family has a secret.
Joy Delaney, mother of four, has gone missing.
From the author of Big Little Lies comes a chilling new mystery to W.
You are an emotional chaos sinkhole, Amy, and I'm sick of it!
Starring Annette Bening.
Nobody can break your heart like your own children.
And Sam Neill.
She will come back.
Here we go. Strap in.
Apples never fall. All new Thursdays, only on W. Stream on Stack TV.